back. It's a crime. It's a crime.
Here come the drums.
C-R-I-M-E-W-A-V. You're rolling with the Crime Wave, the internet's first and only podcast devoted to the crime short story. I'm Seth Harwood, your host, the first name in crime podcast fiction, and I'm ready to bring you this week's story. What's up, Crime Wave veterans and greenies? This is your host, Seth Harwood, and I'm back with you to give you this week's story, which is by Gary Phillips from L.A. Gary is the author of 9 novels, including Bangers, High Hand, The Juke, and Only the Wicked. He's got a number of books out. To find out more, you can check out GaryPhillips.com. He's also the editor of a few awesome collections of short crime fiction. Most recently, Politics Noir, Dark Tales from the Corridors of Power. This book is from Verso, and today's story that we're bringing you by Gary is from this book. It's brand new. It's called Swift Boats for Jesus, and I hope you like it. I would say this story is R-rated-ish. There's one part where there's a little bit of graphic violence that involves sex. If that's not your piece of cake, I'm letting you know what you got coming at ya. This one, not too bad. All right, here we go.
Swift Boats for Jesus by Gary Phillips. Rudy Garza broke a shoelace as he tied one of his Botticellis. He held the torn end to his face, glaring at it like a building inspector looking for cracks in masonry work. It was just a goddamn piece of expensive coated thick string when you got down to it, a lace that matched the rubbed cordovan of his shoes made of ostrich hide. The silver-haired salesman, his buff nails gleaming, had patted Garza's hand in a fatherly way. He'd insisted Garza simply must buy the extra laces only from his store. It just wouldn't do to get those mismatched replacements from the local supermarket. Now would it, sir? He gushed. Certainly not cheat you out of the $10 more you were able to add into the bill. Oh no, Garza muttered, smiling lethargically. Well, he did respect the hustler. Garza retrieved the new lace from the dresser drawer and finished tying his shoes over his herringbone pattern sock. He checked his profile on the built-in mirror on the inside of the bedroom door. He'd gone with the dark Ralph Lauren slacks and the camel tan Oleg Cassini sport coat over the flyaway collar burgundy Zegna shirt and the Belisi silver silk tie with matching pocket square. Garza patted his gut, worried that he'd already had Luis, his tailor, take the pants out. Too many damn gin martini lunches with this contractor or that vendor. Man's got to know when to cut back, he reminded himself in a gruff imitation of his long-gone father's voice. Rudy, Letty called from the kitchen below, can you take Rosie in? I have to be out in Playa earlier than it was originally planned. His wife sold corporate real estate. Not a problem, he called back as his cell phone chimed. He notched an eyebrow, knowing the familiar number on the screen all too well. What you doing up this early, fool? He cracked to Jason Pritchard. Shit might be coming down, son, Pritchard said coldly and efficiently. He was a city attorney in Compton assigned to the neighborhood prosecutor unit. This meant he targeted gangs and gang activity. What's wrong? He willed himself to remain composed. I got a tip the feds are sniffing into that Burkhalter business, his friend said. That dipshit cousin of Hammy's, you know the one I'm talking about, the one I almost had to put in check over the Peacock that night. Yeah, I know, Garza said, dreadfully expectant. Well, that Pentejo got himself arrested coming back across the border carrying some Ingrams with their serial numbers filed off and inserts in the barrels to throw off ballistics. Fuck, Garza swore softly. Then his daughter called up to him. I gotta go, Papa G. I need to help Amy set up her exhibit for science class. I'm on my way, sweetie. Just finishing this quick call. You're always finishing a quick call. Don't make her late, his wife warned as he heard the front door close. So Homeland Security got on his ass, Garza surmised. Naturally, Pritchard confirmed. Way I understand it, Jaime T. Primo was transporting for the Crazy Nines. But of course, he wet his pants once he got caught and said anything and everything he could to make a deal to keep from getting put on the Gitmo Express. Daddy, his daughter appealed. Garza started for the stairs. I'm coming, mija. You got your backpack and lunch? Yes, she drawled, as only a put-upon 12-year-old could. Her older brother had slept at a friend's house. Look, I'm running late, he said to Pritchard. Call me back when you know more. You make sure there's nothing else laying around to back up the testimony of this lame loser like their cousin. Understand? Because I have no desire to get in the wind at my age, my brother. Pritchard clicked off. Father and daughter left. As he drove her to school in the Land Rover, Garza half listened to Rosie's usual drone about some creepy boy or squirrel she saw munching a hot Cheeto, automatically put in a wow or really at the right intervals. He'd also assessed how much damage Jaime's cousin, Hector Rivas, could do. He concluded that what he had to say would make those buzzdicks at the Bureau salivate, but Hector didn't have shit in the way of convicting them. Sure, he'd shoot off his mouth about Garza, but Hector couldn't be that scared of the government that he'd roll over on his cuz. Jaime was the leader of the Crazy Nines. Hector had to be terrified that between here and whatever cell he was rendered to, Jaime would reach out and touch him with a knife across his throat. He kissed his daughter goodbye and watched her saunter into St. Cecilia's with the other children. The Catholic school was a funky assortment of 60s-era buildings, contrasted to the new playground equipment that fronted the state-of-the-art computer lab, both courtesy of a fund drive seeded by the generous donation from Subicon, the mega-developer who'd won the bid for the new complex of shops and theaters being built adjacent to the Happy Trails Casino. Their bid was higher than the others, but Garza had convinced the council that Subicon was worth the investment. The work was done right and usually ahead of schedule, and there was the cherry of the sweet percentage of a local hire and training agreement he'd hammered out on the project. With an under-the-table kickback to him for his efforts, Garza, as Bell Park's city manager, lined his pockets, but he never forgot he was a homeboy who'd fallen into clover. Now that Subicon would gain much initially in erecting this project here in this part of southeast L.A., where the 710 freeway cut through, but Bell Park was all of 6.6 square miles with a 43-person police force and had to contract for fire services from the county. Yet the deal with them allowed the developer to own part of the leased land. In the long run, then, given there was a steady traffic of patrons to the Happy Trails from the other small municipalities in the surrounding area, the swollen coffers of Subicon wouldn't grow much larger or leaner. And a happy international conglomerate was a giving international conglomerate during elections and at special times throughout the year. On his cell behind the wheel, he tried to get Mayor Sharp on the phone, but it went to message. Garza checked the time on the dash, 8:20 a.m. He veered off the main avenue and drove slowly through a residential section. Damn it! He could see Emil Rojas' people were already out door knocking. Look, Abel, Garza said after hurriedly calling and connecting with Chief of Police Ramirez. I need you to get some of your uniforms talking up the mayor. Rojas' people are out thicker than cockroaches. He pronounced it just like Pacino did in Scarface. It wasn't just juiced up rappers who liked to sample that movie. I will, Rudy, Ramirez assured him. And I've got some firefighters coming too, but you better get Don Pedro out of the Pearl Blossom. Fuck. He's been holed up there since about 3 this morning. He didn't go on. He didn't have to. Why didn't you call me? I didn't know about it until an hour ago. Shit, you're his keeper. Garza admonished himself and drove over to the massage parlor located exactly 2 blocks in a hilltop outside of the city in the DMZ of unincorporated county. Tradition held that if a sheriff found a body here and the caseload was high, and when wasn't it, then maybe the body might find itself moved a few hundred yards into Bell Park. Sometimes it worked the other way around if the city cops could get away with it. After all, who was a corpse among friendly rivals? He parked on the side of the 3-story building. The Pearl Blossom personnel conducted their trade on the first 2 floors, with the 2nd floor reserved for the renowned specials. The neon sign and fancy script announcing authentic Thai deep massage was off, its tubes dingy and splattered with bird droppings. He knocked forcefully on the back door security screen. Footsteps on the rear stairs, then Fanny Za opened the inner door and after a beat the outer one. She was in sweats and a tank top with a picture of a collie on it. Her graying black hair stood up and out like a fright wig. How far gone is he, Garza asked, moving past the bleary-eyed woman and onto the stairs. Good morning to you too, fuckhead. Not today, Fanny. Whatever, she muttered, shuffling outside in her bare feet to spit. Upstairs on the 3rd floor, Garza entered her bedroom, which was painted in purples and black for accents. She had one of those old-fashioned vanities in one corner, its makeup table overflowing with small bottles of perfume, eyeliner, lipsticks, and a tube of Bengay, he noted. Mayor Pete Pedro Sharp snored on his back in the bed, his girth tangled among the purple silk sheets and a dark lavender duvet. Garza smiled, shaking his head. In the late 80s, Sharp, a former football and track hero at local Israel Bissell High, had taken his cue from Dylan's song and knew which way the wind blew. He adopted the Mexicanization of his first name when he was running that first time for re-election. The mayor knew from being out and about, let alone from a census chart, that the demographics of Bell Park, once the hillbilly haven of Dust Bowl-era immigrants, had irrevocably changed. The city had seen an influx of African Americans in the 60s, and there had been a resulting power struggle for who got what seat at the table. Sharp, who was black, emerged from the fight and came to office backed by a shaky coalition. This happened just as the next ethnic wave was coming on strong in the city, Latinos. But it didn't hurt that Sharp spoke Spanglish with ease. On a Spanish language station, he verbally outmaneuvered his Latino opponent in his first re-election contest. That candidate had been Ernest, but he was a pocho, a Latino who didn't speak Spanish. He didn't go over well with the new majority. "Pete, time to rock, baby." Garza shook him and only succeeded in interrupting a snore. Sharp smacked his lips, but didn't otherwise make an effort to wake. "Like Dr. Phil says, how's that working out for you?" Behind him, Zah laughed and hacked. She began searching in a nightstand beneath a shelf upon which was a stuffed red and black feathered rooster before a sun painting. These were some sort of religious symbols reflecting her Hmong heritage. A couple of high backhand slaps to the whiskered face roused the mayor. The whites of his eyes were as red as spoiled apples. "Hey," he managed. So I found her half-smoked joint and fired it up. "Let me hug on that, a little of that, will you, my dear?" Sharp held out a large hand. A ring with a dark gem that sucked up the light was on his pinky. She handed the joint across and he took a healthy drag. He didn't cough and his hand didn't quiver as he blew a stream of narcotic smoke. He handed it back to Zah, who leaned over and gave him a peck. "We got a filet gumbo, Pete. You've already missed the breakfasts at the old folks' home, but you can swing by there on your way back from the VFW Hall speech." Garza wasn't the mayor's campaign manager, but knew his schedule more intimately than his honor did. "Oh, what the fuck for, Rudy?" Sharp pushed himself up so that his back was to the headboard. He folded his muscular arms across his broad chest. "Maybe Rojas should get it. I've had a good run, and so have you. Let's golf and play poker in the afternoons and let Mr. Reformer find out just how fucking hard it is to run things. Let reality kick him in the ass and smack that rose-smelling piety out of his mouth." "I'll make some coffee," Zah announced, puffing on her joint as she ambled into the kitchen. "I've heard way too much of this already." Sharp was in his late 60s. Rudy wasn't. The older man might be at the end of his string, but he damn sure had more to give and get. Bell Park's mayor and city council were part-time jobs, the city manager a full-time post. But it was a position that served primarily at the mayor's pleasure, so Garza needed Sharp back in the saddle this one last time. "We have certain obligations, you and I, Mr. Mayor, certain fulfillments that we are directly responsible for their completion. Comprendes, carnal?" Wearily, Sharp began. "If you can't eat their food, drink their booze, and fuck their women, and still vote against them," Garza said, "then they shouldn't have gotten involved in politics in the first damn place. They finished together." Sharp smiled, self-satisfied. The city manager's cell phone chimed again. "Look, you only think you want the lays around and count your liver spots, but that's for old men, Pete, not men like us, not men who make it happen in the streets and in the sheets." Sharp gave him a sideways appraisal. A slight smile creased his seasoned face. He didn't say it, but wanted Garza to go on. "We can't let this prick Rojas set the terms of when you exit office. He's some kind of headline-chasing substitute teacher who got the holy rollers and a few prune-faced pedophilic priests have propped up." "That's right," Sharp agreed, getting into it. "This is trench warfare we're talking about," Garza continued. "This isn't a game for punks and chulos, am I right?" "Hallelujah," Zah cracked from the doorway. The joint hung from her mouth as she wiggled her fingers. "Right on," Sharp added, sitting more erect, wiping a hand across his face. Garza paced about the room, putting the evangelist into his spiel. It used to be it was only twice a year, usually around the 4th of July and Christmas time, which is when Sharp's wife had died 5 years ago, that he had to give him the rah-rah. But this current campaign seemed to have really taken it out of the mayor. He didn't have the fire in the belly for it like before. He really was getting on. Garza stood before the window backlit by the morning sun as he spread his arms. "So what are we going to do, champ? How are we going to rumble?" "Rumble like thunder and strike like lightning," Sharp said. He was sitting on the side of the bed in his striped boxers, scratching his nuts. "And what are we going to unleash on our enemies? What shall we smite them with?" "We shall bring them low with the power of our words and mightiness of our deeds." Zah helped him stand on his wobbly legs. "And who is the captain?" Garza said, silencing his ringing cell phone. He is, Zah yelled, slapping Sharp on the shoulder. And does he not lead our swift boats through treacherous waters? I do, Sharp vowed, giving him a quick salute. And do we let slip the swift boats against our enemies simply for our own selfish reasons? No, sir, Sharp and Zah said in unison. For who do we guide our swift boats to victory? The people, Sharp said solemnly. Our swift boats are for the people. Amen, Garza said. Now get your funky ass showered, shaved, and dressed, and let's get back in the game, son. Most assuredly, Sharp said, as Zah, arm around his waist, led him to the bathroom. Back on the road, Garza returned the two calls he'd gotten from Sharp's campaign manager. He told her where to fetch him. Don't we need to go over some last-minute strategy? Serna Chacon then said, chuckling. No doubt, Garza answered. As he drove back through town, he was pleased to see the mayor's volunteers were now canvassing as well. Who are these wholesome young women you have out on Portillo? He inquired. He knew the regular volunteers. Don't you go get any ideas inviting one or two of these dewy-eyed females to your politics one-on-one sessions, Teach, she warned. They're part of a poli-sci course over at Cal State. Nice, huh? Their professor and I attend the same AA meetings. In fact, I'm his sponsor. You're such a creative woman, CC, he complimented sincerely. Then you better reward me. I need to relieve some stress having to deal with our man, she sighed heavily. They set a time for their usual place, and Garza headed for the Happy Trails, passing back through part of the north side. The base for Emilio Rojas' support had come out of the precincts here. This is where a grassroots group called the Local Justice Initiative, a bunch of community college dropout Che Guevaras, had organized members of congregations about the proliferation of liquor stores in the area. The residents became activated on that issue, getting some ink and results. Indeed, the north side contained more than its fair share of liquor stores. After all, Garza had seen to several of their permits being okayed by walking the paperwork over to council and doing some horse trading. One of those galvanized residents was Garza, who, because of service as a medic in the Gulf War, got the attention of the Mau Maus and the Sanctified and was off to the races. St. Cecilia's was located in one of those northern precincts, but its leaders knew who buttered their bread and had held two pancake breakfasts for the re-election of Pedro Sharp. Inside the casino, the SSIers and the daywalkers, those old-timers who recharged at home at night to be ambulatory in the sunlight, were already vigorously tapping the keys of the video slots or getting ready for morning bingo. Jules, a former Vato now working the security detail, gave Garza the high sign. On the side of his neck was a faded tattoo of an eagle grappling with a python. Like the others decorating his body, he was in the process of having it removed via laser treatments. The city manager moved past him and into the outer office of Niels Weaver, the manager of operations. His lordship available, he asked Bertha Yanez, the receptionist. As with Jules, he'd gotten her the job at the casino. Let me check, Rudy. She buzzed the inner office either for show or as a heads up. Weaver did like his morning toot. Please go on, good sir, she said, smiling and did a flourish with her hand indicating the inner door. Yanez, a high school dropout, had done 6 3/4 years on a 10-year bid for aiding and abetting the transportation of a truckload of ecstasy. She not only got her GED, but took coursework that she was now completing toward becoming a paralegal. The fact that she'd been incarcerated in a minimum security facility instead of the max lockdown prosecutors initially wanted to send her to was due to Garza's intervention when he was on the city council. In the office, Weaver, a lanky individual with thin glasses and thinning brown blonde hair, stood and held out a fist. What up, homeboy? Garza knocked his knuckles against the other man's and remained standing. We might have a problem on the Burkhalter thing. He explained the call he received that morning. So far, it seems like the feds are stirring the waters to see what floats to the surface, but we shouldn't ignore this, Garza added. Over the years, Bell Park's administration had been the focus of several inquiries by the district attorney and the bureau. There was the allegation of their injudicious use of highway checkpoints to bust undocumented drivers so as to impound and sell their cars and raise municipal funds. Or that crazy nine shot callers had been tipped off about impending police raids. This and various other allegations Garza, Weaver, and several other interested parties could ill afford to have proven in court. Weaver asked, You talked to Jaime T? Not yet and not likely if I can avoid it, Garza admitted. I've got an election to secure and don't need him and his crew out and about causing consternation. Weaver pursed his lips and blew air. If this investigation gains momentum, I'll have to alert Al. That's why I stopped by. We need to make sure he doesn't, you know, go all native on us. Weaver laughed dryly. Shit. Alfonso Hardin was a Mexican Jew. His father was from Cuernavaca and his mother had been a World War II refugee whose family snuck into Mexico, escaping the Nazis out of Poland. Hardin originally made his money in the discount mattress racket and due to family ties on his dad's side here in Bell Park, had opened the Happy Trails Casino more than 20 years ago. The casino drew patrons from all over and accounted for some $2 million plus in salaries and tax revenues for the city. This was not an insignificant sum to the small municipality, and thus Hardeen was a player in local politics as he was a backer of Mayor Sharp. Hardeen had also dabbled in the internal affairs of Israel, supporting Labor Party members as well as owning land over there. At one point a few years ago, the gang situation was getting out of hand in Bell Park. This was due to the rival Rolling Daltons, a black gang with some Latino membership, encroaching on the Nines' drug territory. Innocents were getting cut down on the crossfire, and naturally the residents were demanding action from the outgunned and outnumbered police force. Hardeen, from his compound on the beach in Baja, sent a group of mercenaries into town, some of them former Shin Bet and African campaign veterans. It did not go well with these parachute-in, parachute-out types, used to slapping the populace around and letting the good Lord sort them out later. Even in Bell Park, civil liberties couldn't be that blatantly ignored, particularly as the media latched into the story. If he gets a mind to send those yahoos back this time, Weaver noted, he'll have our pictures in their target files. Garza said, it's not going to get to that. Weaver leaned back in his seat. It can't, Rudy. Promising to keep him in the loop, Garza was back on the road. The radio ad they'd done for the Spanish language station was running. The minute spot had the voices of two middle-aged women talking as if over coffee at the kitchen table. Why, yes, one said. That Mr. Rojas seems nice. But with all the abuse problems of the church, why did he have that young girl sitting on his lap? I know, the second one replied, reading her a story. She snorted incredulously. Que lastima. Didn't he know better? What kind of teacher is he anyway? There was no campaign mailer of Rojas with a child on his lap. Perception was everything. Sweet, Garza said to himself as he kept an appointment in nearby Santo Pico, a city even smaller than Bell Park. In a modest stucco home with hand-sewn curtains, he met with the heads of several block clubs throughout the southeast area. These women, ranging in age from their 40s to their 70s, would be on duty tomorrow at several election booths in Bell Park. Each had a son or daughter, grandchild or great-grandchild, who Garza had helped in some way. They had long memories and a peasant's sense of loyalty. These were women like Garza's dead mother, and he like them. Have some tea, mijo, Mrs. Almirez greeted him as he stepped inside the kitchen from the side door. She turned to pour from a steaming ceramic pot. Thank you, he said, nodding his head and greeting the others, some 37 in all. This was a quick overview of tomorrow's plan. Nothing crude to potentially raise a red flag like misplaced ballot boxes or having the dead on the voting rolls. Through his normal chisme, the drama, and the back-fence gossip leading up to the election, plus the use of the traditional phone banking to tabulate how people were voting, these women had been given names of their friends and neighbors ID'd as Rojas' supporters. We're ready, Estela Roncino said after Garza finished with last-minute details. Rather than try to stuff the ballot box as Garza had arranged in the past, these women would, when feasible, merely punch another hole in an already punched card of some of Rojas' supporters. An overvoted ballot was as invalid as an unmarked one. Now, no one overdoes it, right? He said to the ladies. We can't have any of you going to the pokey. That got nervous laughter. The idea here was that these women knew a lot of people or were known to a lot of people. The older ones, the neighborhood tias, the community aunties, would engage the opponent's voters. The election was predicted to be light, so a backup was unlikely at the polls. Therefore, it was natural that there would be more time for casual conversation. The person was distracted talking to the older woman while handing the ballot in its paper sleeve to the younger woman. When this one tore off the perforated top of the punch card for the voter, fumbling a bit to expose that other part of the punched card, they'd use a punch on the end of a ballpoint pen to put another hole in the card, then tap it back into its sleeve. The distracted person, after chatting up the tia about her child's progress in school, or that recipe for the Christmas tamales, would, as required, place that altered card in the sealed ballot box's slot. Garza had rehearsed the punch move with the selected punchers, and he was impressed at the level of sleight of hand these old gals had mastered. They had few reservations about committing larceny in the service of La Causa. In a close race with low turnout, a 1 or 2% spoilage could be the margin of victory. He gave a finishing pep talk, making sure to crank it down from the sermon with Sharp, and was off again. At his desk at his city hall office, which is a squat, unassuming cinder block bunker of a structure tucked into a corner of Bolivar Park, Jason Pritchett rang him on his cell. They found Delilah, he said without introduction. She's living down there in Tucson near the college. In fact, she shacked up with, of all things, an adjunct professor of late 19th century French fucking literature. I guess her thing with Burkhalter turned her on to nerves or some shit, he said contemptuously.
Fuck,
Garza said. Double fuck, his friend concurred. The good news is, I learned from another source that she got popped a few months ago on a meth charge, so she's still tweaking. And if she's tweaking, she's as unreliable as Hector to a jury. Yeah, hopefully. But that might not stop an indictment from coming down, the lawyer noted. The Bureau has a hard on for you, Rudy. As was their custom, they were using disposable cell phones. They switched them out every other week. True that, my brother, Garza said, suddenly upbeat. He'd been sent an inter-office email and had opened it while they talked. He told Pritchard the good news. The poll we did Saturday has Don Pedro up by 5 points. When we get over this hump tomorrow, then I can concentrate on how I'll tarnish their image and cause doubt and confusion before the feds can spit shine their shoes. Don't worry. Uh-huh. Be happy. Exactly. Telling him he'd report in if there was any other pertinent news, Pritchard rang off. For the next 2 hours or so, Garza did the city's business, from adjusting gaps in the sanitation budget to meeting with the city-sponsored after-school program. He was in his groove. Then, crossing the parking lot for city employees, he saw a familiar car come around the long way. He couldn't mistake the vehicle for anyone else's, as it was a fully restored and fully modernized maroon 1935 four-door Packard touring sedan. It was one gorgeous machine, but Garza wasn't pleased to see it now. The car slowed in front of him, and the rear window slid down on its electric motor. In the back was Jaime Torres, the Crazy Nine's chief. Due to a mystical conversion brought on while on peyote, getting a lap dance 2 years ago, he'd taken on the Aztec name of Tuhutzecatl. No one, not even Torres, most of the time could pronounce it. So he remained Jaime T. My friend, the gang leader said, pointing one of his long black nails at Garza. There were rings on three of those fingers. I understand we have a problem. He was sitting nearest the passenger's window in the Edwardian gear he favored these days, complete with owlish sunglasses. Whatever the hell that had to do with the Aztecs, nobody dared ask him. Garza explained in a smooth and calm way why he didn't see the Hector and Delia situation as a problem. Let us hope, the other man said, for I am most vexed that this situation my cousin is in may have come from an inside tip. A snitch, you'd say. Why do you suspect that? Ilima has seen it. Next to him was an 8-ball chick Garza didn't recognize, though he did note her ample breast strained against her skimpy top. A stylized skull was tattooed on her cheek. Beside her, on the car's bench seat, was an older woman who went by the Ilima tag. She was Jaime T's personal bruja, a witch and spiritual advisor, but Garza knew her when she was Susana Rios from the projects. Shit, Garza said, looking directly at her. She couldn't see pale-ass Paris Hilton naked in a room full of Zulus. Rios had a hand on 8-Ball's thigh. She raised that hand and languidly gave Garza the finger as the car glided away. Jaime T might be all ancestored up, but he did love his three ways. Back on the streets, he ate 2 carne asada tacos from a cart vendor and headed over to the Royal Viking Motel for his assignation with the mayor's campaign manager, Bell Park Police Sergeant Serna Chacon. She texted him to be at the motel at this time. It wasn't their first such meeting at the VK, a few freeway exits further south of Bell Park. Don't be shy, stud, she teased. They'd barely entered the room and Chacon was tugging on a zipper. She was dressed in civilian clothes but had brought her department-issued equipment bag. This she tossed on the bed. Please, I do have my standards, he joked, pretending to pull away. You better get that standard at attention, soldier. She gave his crotch a squeeze and undid her skirt, revealing a lavender bra and her feathered serpent tattoo that began on her ab stomach and disappeared below the belt line of her pants. Soon she was down to her thong and moving toward the bed, Garza close behind her, naked and excited. On the bed, they snorted some coke she'd brought along to charge her batteries. The two of them got busy with various efforts at exchanging body fluids. You like that baby, she murmured, nibbling his inner thigh. You know I do, he moaned as he reached back to the equipment bag. Given what she was doing, she didn't see him reach inside. He withdrew an old-fashioned revolver with a 6-inch barrel. Chacon had her eyes closed, gobbing him up, and he slapped that warm steel against her scrunched forehead. Startled, she halted and gulped hard. Get on your back, he commanded, the gun unwavering on her. She did as commanded, keeping her legs closed like a chaste schoolgirl. Open them, he barked, using the business in the ancient police special to tap her knee. What are you going to do with that? Don't you worry about that. You just do as I say. He rubbed the barrel along her inner leg, moving it steadily upward. Please don't, she pleaded. I'll do anything you want. She put her hands over the area he was intent on reaching. Garza's heavy breathing drowned out the din of horns and brakes outside the motel room. The two were in lustful thrall. She grabbed his wrist, but his other hand was around her throat, and he worked the tip of the gun past the material of her sheer panty and inserted it in her vagina. She gasped, "Do me, Rudy," she said as she tongued his ear and lobe. He worked the barrel of the gun in and out of her as he bucked in pleasure, her strong arms holding him tight while she bit into his shoulder. Almost there, she told him to stop, and they came together using the tried and true method. Cooling off, she asked him, "Are you getting jammed over Burkhalter?" "How do you know about that?" "I have my ways." Her cell rang. Noting the number, she answered and listened. "Okay, Pete, I'm on my way." She clicked off. "The mayor demands my presence." "How's he holding up?" "He's got the spirit again, Deacon Garza. He's on the warpath. I'm going over with him to fire up the Delta phone bankers." The Deltas were the remaining black sorority in town. "As long as he makes it to the last stretch. Don't you worry your pretty little head about it, sweetheart." She grabbed for his limp member through the slit of his boxers, giggling. He returned to City Hall and, after tidying up a few matters, made his rounds. He dropped off campaign literature to the parking enforcement crew on late lunch break, delivered Braille call sheets to the home for the blind, and trays of Pollo Fiero chicken to the soccer club whose members would be out doing evening canvassing. Somewhere past 7 that night, he knocked his tumbler of Jameson's against Jason Pritchard's at the Peacock Inn. "Nice work, home," he toasted his friend. "Good thing I remembered Collier had retired to Phoenix. He put her on the run." Pritchard smiled broadly and quaffed his drink. He referred to Bob Collier, a former captain with the Compton Police Department, when Compton had its own department before contracting with the sheriff. Pritchard called in a chit and got him to drive to Tucson and flash his badge in Dia Gomez's face. He growled that those nice, clean-cut FBI agents who contacted her were the least of her problems, that all sorts of nastiness with its hush-hush branch of law enforcement he represented was about to befall her for narco-trafficking. He'd been back with a warrant, he'd advised her. He watched from hiding as she tossed a suitcase and a raggedy Camry and took off from the adjunct professor's house. With her gone, Hector Rivas would play his tune to the cheap seats, but the feds knew that they had nada. Burkhalter had been the comptroller of Bell Park. 3 years ago, there had been another reform push, and the mayor and his allies in the council were forced to fire his crony and hire the stuck-up buzzbutt Burkhalter. He began to dig up money streams best left alone. Hardeen was unhappy, as was Jaime T. and Pritchard. Using selective prosecution, Pritchard helped clean up the gang problem in nearby Compton, but also kept the Rolling Daltons from expanding. And there had been cash thank yous from Jaime T. regarding this. Fortunately, the 40-something Burkhalter, a bachelor, was a lonely man. Garza had Delia, an aging neighborhood chick, dressed like a square and made sure she bumped into Burkhalter in City Hall. He tumbled hard. Soon, she had a key to his apartment. One evening, she let Hector in with a replacement computer tower just like his. Only this one contained buku downloaded bestiality images. Naturally, some of these images were leaked to the media. Burkhalter protested, but to no avail. His credibility was toast, as was his investigation. Pritchard talked with Garza some more, then left for a date. The city manager did some politicking in the working-class bar of laborers, copier salesmen, and receptionists. He glad-handed and gabbed, bought a couple of rounds, handed out buttons, and reminded them of their polling places. Out in the warm evening, walking to his car, Chacon phoned him. He'd stopped near a gardener's old pickup truck laden with lawn equipment. "I know you're an insatiable woman, but I've got to get home." "Rudy," she said in a rushed tone. "Where are you?" "I'm in my car and coming to get you." "What are you talking about, Cece?" "Jaime T. thinks you're the snitch." "Why the fuck would he think that?" Two men dressed in working clothes exited the bar. "Because that silly bitch we have undercover was on the hot seat and came up with a story implicating you. She's the one that provided the tip leading to Hector Rivas's bust." The two working men stood close to the pickup. A chill cooled Garza's body. "She got a skull tattooed on her cheek?" "Yeah. That way our unions would know who she is. But she was able to phone in tonight and told me she was about to be exposed this afternoon and panicked. I was her training officer, so she's close to me. That's why she felt she had to get it off her chest in case it caused problems." "Problems," she snorted. "That goddamn Elvira, or whatever the hell she calls herself, had a vision that someone close to him was snitching. I've got to get you to a safe house, then we can work this out somehow." The two men closed the gap to where Garza stood with his back to them. "Okay, I better come up with an excuse for Letty. Garza didn't finish his sentence as the first of the 15 stab wounds entered his body, piercing his lungs and kidneys and stomach. No, wait, it's not, he tried to tell his assassins, but they were coldly and quickly efficient in their mission. They left him curled in his blood on the sidewalk, Chacon yelling into the cell phone of his now slack hand. As they drove off in the pickup, sure not to stand out like, say, in a lowered ride with spinner rims or the like, Rudy Garza rolled over on his back on the blacktop, his Botticelli's unstained at attention. He stared peacefully at the stars. One star in particular seemed to get brighter and bigger, filling his vision. In the heart of that brilliance, forms materialized. Swift boats were swooping down from the heavens to lift him up and take him away. Hallelujah.
That was Gary Phillips reading for us his story, Swift Boats for Jesus, from the collection Politics Noir. You can find out more information about Gary at garyphillips.com. I'll have a link for that in the show notes and a link to his ongoing serialized novel, Citizen Kang, at thenation.com. I'm Seth Harwood, your host here at The Crime Wave.
In fact, it's a crime. It's a crime.
Here come the drums!
Thank you for listening to The Crime Wave. I'm your host, Seth Harwood. I hope you'll check out the rest of the stories here on Crime Wave and tell your friends about it. It's the CRIMEWAV. Help pass the word, register at our site so that you can participate in the forums and add comments to the episodes. You can email us with questions or comments at info@crimewave.com. Aldo, the mystery dog, and I will get your email, and we'll get back to you right quick. You can also call the K7 line, 206-350-4998, to leave comments or feedback. And if you leave a great message, we'll even play it at the end of a show. So drop a line, hop on the website, visit often, spread the word, and thank you for stopping by The Crime Wave. So here's a song to the star, but the shape of a snake.